the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, we're coming back at you again with another episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. Today we're going to do something a little different, and today we're going to focus on cotton. So in the studio with me today, we have Dr. Don, Dr. Jeff, and for the first time from East Mississippi, Angus Catchout will be calling in on our handy-dandy phone line. So the first time Angus is not set in the studio with us. What you feeling like this morning? 55 and fine?
Oh, yeah. It's a little different calling in this time, though. I think it's going to be a good way if we're in the field. In fact, that's when I'm kind of walking in right now, just hoping the wind don't get in the mic.
Yeah, sounds like you might need to get in the truck and shut the door.
But I'm a long way from the truck at the moment.
I hear you. Well, I know y'all had cotton bugs on your mind today, and Jeff and I rode and looked at some stuff in rice early this morning, and he said, man, there's some crazy things going on with insects out there. So what I'm going to try to do is take a back seat, and I'm going to let y'all talk about what you want to talk about in cotton, and I'll interject when I need to. So, Angus, you want to start, or Jeff, how you want to go?
Well, we can just kind of give a general overview that we can get in a little bit of details on, you know, on some of the things, I guess, that we talk about. One of the things that's a little odd this year, you know, we see some of this to some extent, I guess, every year, but not like this year, and it's three-cornered alfalfa hopper damage in cotton. I've had more calls on three-cornered alfalfa hoppers this year in cotton than I've probably my whole career combined. And it's frustrating people because the plants are, you know, so easy to see the damage and then trying to figure out what to do about them. And, I mean, it's just making people crazy right now trying to figure that out.
So, Angus, what growth stage of cotton do those alfalfa hoppers generally start becoming a problem?
It seems that it's somewhere around 4 or 5 inches, and it starts tapering off when you get to 8 to 10 inches. So it's that window, you know, somewhere really probably between, I guess, 4 and 8 inches seems to be that sweet spot that they like.
So even if that cotton is shanked up looking pretty, they can jump on it and affect it?
Well, as long as it's small, they can, absolutely.
The thing that makes some of those decisions difficult with three-cornered alfalfa hoppers, especially right now while it's hot and dry, is the number one insecticide for controlling three-cornered alfalfa hoppers is going to be a pyrethroid, and that's going to create problems with other things that are going to be out there in the field. Even in some of our counts this year, we've got some foliar thrips test with a pyrethroid in it, and the pyrethroid treatment to thrips numbers in my test are higher than they are in the untreated, significantly higher.
Yeah, and that's definitely been something that's, you know, been somewhat of a question that we're getting, and a concern is if you're, say, 3 to 4 leaf cotton and you're noticing three-cornered alfalfa hopper damage, but you have a lot of thrips, trying to pick a material that you can, you know, essentially maybe kill both with, and pyrethroids are definitely not it. I've even got calls this morning about maybe trying to use, a neonic. The neonic foliars just don't have any thrips control hardly at all. They do as a seed treatment when they're taken into the plant, but from a foliar standpoint, they don't. What a lot of people have been doing is actually kicking their acetate rate up to about 0.5 pounds. And, you know, that does pretty dang good on the hoppers, and also it gives you some thrips control. But there's baggage there because then you have the potential to flare spider mites and aphids.
Yeah, I know when I was in Louisiana, I learned the hard way about flaring spider mites trying to kill other bugs. And with the weather we're having right now, isn't it kind of spider mitey weather?
Well, yeah, except it's a little cool. Let it warm back up and we're potentially in conditions that are good for mites. And a pyrethroid as well will flare both mites and aphids as also.
Well, if you were out there this morning, you know, I hate to say it, but it probably almost felt like California, not a cloud in the sky, blue clear sky, June, 58 degrees, pretty.
It was a nice day to be working this morning.
Nice day to be sweeping for bugs, huh?
Yeah, no doubt, it has been. It was 53 here this morning, which is, man, just shocking for this time of year. You know, getting back to this hopper thing, you know, there's a lot of people that have never experienced this before. And I've actually had quite a few people text me and say, no, that can't be right. Three-cornered alfalfa hoppers, they don't get on cotton, just beans. But, you know, we've had a history with these over the years. In fact, we had a former graduate student, Jeff Ramsey. He now works for Corteva there in Leland. We did a side project where we actually tagged hundreds and hundreds of plants that were hit by three-cornered alfalfa hoppers. And we followed those plants all the way through the season, and we kept up with the plants as far as the health, I guess, after they had been damaged by three-cornered alfalfa hoppers. And what we saw with that is there's actually a large percentage of those plants that actually die. And the ones that don't die, you know, we carried those same individual plants. We hand-yielded them. And they never really recover. Very few of those plants that are hit by hoppers actually recover. Now, the good news is, if it's not just some extreme event where you're actually looking at really, really high damage, which is most people are not, it's enough just to get your attention, the neighboring plants compensate and you don't see any yield loss. The problem we have right now is those individual plants are so visible, they have a unique look to them. A farmer walks into a field and they see them and already may have a thin stand from the horrible conditions that we have. And they're just really nervous about it, and I understand that.
All right, Angus. So let's stop a minute and talk about this. You keep mentioning the damage. I'm assuming it's stem girdling, like in soybean. What's the damage?
Yeah, it's stem girdling. It's the same thing that you see in soybeans. The difference, though, and it's a big difference in soybeans, those girdled stems, if those plants don't lodge, and a lot of times they don't, they go on to produce normal yield. In cotton, that's not the case at all. They hurt cotton way worse than they hurt soybeans. And, you know, we have this well documented. But again, most of the people that are calling, the levels that they're describing are enough to get your attention. But based on the work that we did, I don't think it's a situation where it's going to be yield limiting at all, because they don't usually hit a bunch of plants in a row and cause a big skip. What they do is they hit random plants just all over the place. Generally, that works itself out, and the plants around it compensate, and you don't see a yield loss.
Yeah, that's a good point. You rarely see an overall big yield loss from that type of damage in cotton. And it's the fact that those plants you mentioned, Angus, that they die or they stay extremely stunted, that can actually be a good thing, because in some situations, like in soybeans, where those plants will continue to grow, if you get a big wind event later, those plants can lodge and you can see a yield loss. So those plants essentially become a weed at that point in soybeans if the numbers are high enough. But the fact that those plants aren't competing with their neighboring plants anymore in cotton can actually be a good thing and allow those plants to compensate for the loss of those plants.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and I've told a lot of people on the phone this week that same thing. The fact that this is happening so early in the season, and those plants just sit there and they either die or they're you know, essentially not competing anymore, is actually a good thing. It's in their favor that's happening.
Yeah, and you look at a lot of the work that Darren and I had done with seeding rates in the past. You got ample room to lose some in cotton for sure.
If it happens early enough.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think the biggest concern is, you know, there's just a lot of fields that don't look good right now with the weather conditions we had, and some of them already have thin stands, so I understand their concern. But, you know, in a month, I think we're going to forget about this, at least to a large degree, and you know, we'll be moving on, and cotton will get its feet under it, and we'll be in good shape.
Yeah, I've seen some this week, and some of my beans where they got in it, and with all the wind we've had the last few days, just plants breaking over. So they're out there.
Somebody brought this to my attention last night, and I think that this is there's definitely maybe some logic to this. One, I think we just got a bad hopper year. Sometimes some pests are at a lot higher levels than other years. But think about all the cotton we got last year, where we put a bunch of three-cornered alfalfa hoppers to bed, in other words, over those same fields this year are no longer beans, they're cotton. There could be that effect coming in, too. Not only is it a big hopper year, we just got a lot more cotton than we've had, you know, in the past, and we overwintered a lot of three-cornered alfalfa hoppers that when they came out, what's in them fields now is cotton.
So you're telling me we got so much cotton that we forgot what it looked like with it on them?
Well, I'm just saying that, no, not really. It's just not a usual problem. I'm just saying that we had so many beans last year in places that we have cotton and other things now. When they come out of overwintering, there might not have been as many beans. It's just a theory.
So you're saying it's
not as many beans to go to so they hit cotton.
It's a soybean cotton rotation problem.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm hitting at, but I don't know that for sure. But it makes sense.
I wouldn't call it a problem though. But there may be some association.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was getting at. That's right.
Yeah. The other thing I've been hearing about, you know, just to kind of get off hoppers for a minute, is it seems like aphid numbers are a lot higher in cotton this year, and hearing of some really big numbers of aphids in some small cotton this year.
Yeah, I'm hearing the same thing. And, you know, on occasion, kind of like hoppers, you deal with aphids on really small cotton. But I don't remember either right off. We're treating 4 and 5 leaf cotton for aphids in a long time, and we are this year.
Yeah, and it's so dry right now, and especially with this cool temperatures this week, cotton's not wanting to grow, and we rarely show a yield loss from cotton aphids, but, you know, under the conditions we are right now, they're holding the plants back some, and that's something that we definitely don't need, especially as late as this crop is.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I had that conversation again this morning. You know, I asked the guy when he called about the aphids. I said, you know, what kind of numbers are you running? Is this something that you think you need to treat? He said, this is something that's absolutely a no-brainer. When you walk out there, you know you got to treat. And I said, yep, I understand that.
Yep. So what are you hearing people are using right now?
Well, you know, the list is short. It's very short, and it's actually uncommon that some of these are thrips shots and aphid shots at the same time, so that's changing those decisions. What we're doing, it's an easy call if you're around Pinhead Square and you have plant bugs. In that case, they're using Transplant. That's one of the things that I've been telling people is what we need to think about is not necessarily if they're not extremely bad to control them, is just not to flare them. So if you're treating thrips, you know, you got a few options with thrips, but probably the least likely thing to disrupt this system and make the aphids worse is going to be Intrepid Edge at 3 ounces, and it's looked really good in our test. Number two on that list, I'm telling them we need to go to Bidrin. You know, y'all remember this. There was a time Bidrin killed aphids. It doesn't really do so great anymore, but it may provide just a little bit of a suppression, at least to keep them from flaring. But my first choice would be probably Intrepid Edge in this situation if you're treating thrips, just to try to stop the flare.
Yeah, the difficult situation is I'm hearing a little bit about we're in between the aphid spray or the thrip sprays and our first plant bug sprays. And when we get in that situation, the options are really limited. And we really don't have, if it's plants that have to be sprayed at that point, we really don't have a good option during that time window.
That's exactly right. At least an option that's, you know, not so costly that it's going to break the bank before we even get into thinking about plant bugs. I mean, we're at a point right now, and I'd be curious on your thoughts on this, Jeff and Don. I mean, I really got 2 aphid materials that I go to, carbene, which is extremely expensive, and then we got Transform. But Transform, our Section 18, is for plant bugs. But that's really our two. Now, the one that's a little bit of a wild card for, and Jeff, I know you did a trial. I'd like you to maybe elaborate a little bit on this that we haven't had available to us in cotton before, but we have a real good experience with sugarcane aphids in grain soil in the Savanto. So Savanto could be an aphid option too, but it's going to be weak on plant bugs.
Yeah, and we're fortunate enough to get a test out last year looking at 2 rates. I don't remember the rates that we looked at with Savanto. We went below the labeled rate just because of cost. And what we saw is that there, we did have a, somewhat of a rate response, especially in terms of the residual control. We got a good initial knockdown regardless of what rate we used, but where we went below that labeled rate, they got back. The aphids came back in that situation. But, you know, that may be, may still be an option in that window where we're trying to get to that first transform spray for plant bugs.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, the last thing we want to do right now, this time of year, is start breaking the bank for cotton aphids.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And one thing that people need to, that's listening to this, or going to listen to this, need to realize is those imidacloprid shots or Centric shots are not going to give them aphid control. I mean, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, we've actually seen the neonics flaring cotton aphids recently.
You know, that ship has sailed. I think the resistance is widespread to those, and I mean, I see zero control with those products on aphids and have for years.
Yeah.
So one of the things, you know, that I guess, again, backing up a little bit, because this is, this year is really complicated. There's so many things going on. And I'd like to mention maybe this as well. We got all these little things going on in a lot of places, yet have they all sort of coalesced to one big geography. So we got a lot of little things happening in a lot of areas, but there's some of this cotton that's so late. I mean, we're still dealing with some now May planted cotton, some really high numbers of thrips, and trying to come up with a cocktail to possibly kill thrips, not flare spider mites, kill aphids, and, you know, is getting harder and harder. And a lot of this is not a blanket recommendation that we can make. It's a field by field call.
Yeah, I heard one field or several. I mean, this was 5, 6, 7 leaf cotton that they were going to treat for thrips because it wasn't growing, because it's dry and it's cool, and there was a bunch of thrips out there. So it's definitely going to be a very unusual year, and already is.
Yeah, there's some thrips being treated at leaf stages that we, in a normal year, would never be treating. And I'm going to not say they're not justified. I'm going to say a lot of them are justified. Some 5, 6 node cotton that's being treated based on, you know, they send us pictures, and I look at them like, man, there ain't no way I wouldn't treat that cotton with the weather we have right now. That's unusual, but that's what we're facing right now.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody the other day, and this is the kind of year that there's going to be a lot of consultants, and I hate to say this, but there's going to be a lot of consultants and scouts that are ready to pull their hair out within the next month or so, because so many things this year are so different, and what's happening in one field is going to be completely different than what's happening in another field just across the turn row sometimes.
You know, and something we haven't mentioned yet, and I'm getting this call almost daily as well, and I'm sure y'all are too. What about all the cotton that's 5, 6 leaf, and then we got cotyledon cotton next to it? So now we're made, you know, just when we went through that dry period, we had a lot of stuff that sat in the ground, never came up, and now we have 2 and 3 ages of cotton in the same field that are all requiring some kind of different pest, you know, treatment to go out, and that's complicating this thing even further.
Yeah, making me frustrated just sitting here thinking about it.
I know. I mean, I got a call the other day. I got 15% of my plants in the field are 1 leaf, and I got about 20% that are 2 leaf. The rest are 6 leaf, and I got, you know, 300% thrips and immatures all over the small stuff. But do I make a thrips application for, you know, 30% of the field? That's what I'm saying. These calls now, you got to walk your way, wade through, you know, each scenario. There's not any newsletter or anything that we can put out. The situations are just so different everywhere.
And those are going to be like that through to the end.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I replanted cotton this morning. This has been, you know, we're blessed to have these great jobs, is doing this research, trying to provide this third-party, unbiased, you know, information to our clientele. But this is a year that, man, I seriously feel so sorry for the farmers with the flood and everything else. In my own program, I have replanted and replanted and replanted. It's just horrible conditions. And I'm ready to be looking at July when all this covers over and we can start concentrating on something. But I can't imagine, you know, the stress that these farmers are having.
You know, one good thing right now is I'm hearing about very low plant bug numbers. It's not widespread, but the plant bug sprays that are going out seem to be fairly small and isolated right now. But I think at least, you know, generally at this point in June, a lot of cotton, which the cotton's usually a little bit earlier than this, but we're usually well into spraying plant bugs right now. And, you know, I've had several people call and tell me, well, not tell me, but asking me where the plant bugs are.
Yeah, that I have too. And I've heard of a spot or two that's pretty heavy, but the norm is they're pretty low right now. Of course, I know we all know that's going to change pretty quick. But, you know, that kind of leads into another question. Some of that first planted cotton that has actually taken off and squaring good, 10 nodes, you know, we're at that third week of squaring. For us in Mississippi, one of our go-tos and has been for a long time, I think it's probably one of the biggest things that we do to help keep plant bugs in check is that third week of diamond squaring, diamond application. And right now I got people calling that are at that mark with zero plant bugs in the field. So, you know, I've spent some time here lately trying to explain that diamond application was never really meant to be an automatic. That's just, you know, 95% of the time when those adult migrations come into a field, if you don't have any plant bugs, let's give it another week. Even if we have to move that diamond shot the first bloom, it's every bit as important as it was at the third week of squaring, but we need to time it more on when some adults are moving in the field.
Yeah, that early diamond application, that always coincided with when we get that big adult migration. And in a normal year, or I don't know if there's a such thing as a normal year, but in a typical year, that third week of squaring in cotton generally coincided with when the silks in corn are starting to turn brown. If turn brown, and the corn's no longer going to be attractive to plant bugs. And so the corn's way behind this year. A lot of the corn's way behind this year. So, you know, kind of watching that corn as well is going to give a pretty good indication of when that migration's going to come. Because I think right now the plant bugs are out there. They're just not in the cotton right now. But at some point soon, they're going to be moving into it. And that's when we want to put that diamond out, is based on that big movement of the adults into cotton.
Well, that's still not going to be that simple either. It's like Angus said earlier, you got three ages of cotton in the same field, and then you can look in a square mile and area and find every stage of corn imaginable right now as well. So I think everything's going to be drawn out as far as movement out of corn of, you know, plant bugs, probably worms as well.
And I think you're 100% right. I've been all over the Delta this week looking at our plots and everything, and I still see corn that's just above your knee to brown silk and everything in between. And, you know, just kind of thinking about how that influences both bollworms and plant bugs, my initial thoughts are, is just what you just said, Don. We're going to see some trickles for a long time rather than some distinct movements of both of those pests. What it's looking like.
Yeah, it sounds like we're probably going to have a lot of things to talk about on podcast, and I'm sure we'll be doing another one of these here pretty soon.
Yeah.
But I think we probably need to start wrapping up. Is there any last things you want to say, Angus?
Well, I just mentioned, I want to go back to spider mites just for a minute. You know, I thought when we were in that two-week really dry spell that they were going to blow up really bad just due to the weather. And what we saw was there's a few areas where they were bad. One of our consultants sent me some pictures on, you know, just a field edge where they actually were killing cotton. And then I heard about a couple more spots yesterday where they're just getting going in fields. They didn't, I guess, establish themselves to the level that I thought they would. At the time, I thought they would, but I think the spider mite thing is about to get going, you know, pretty good too, just based on some of the recent conversations that I had.
Yep, without a doubt.
You know, I guess if we don't have, you know, I don't even know where we're at on the time anymore, but, you know, that's just some things that we've talked about today that we need to be thinking about. And I think most people around have our contact info, and I think we're going to have some situations we're going to have to walk through on the phone. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, we're going to keep putting information out as much as we can. But I'm not seeing a one-shoe-fits-all this year at all.
Yep, me too. But so I guess with that in mind, if y'all need us, give us a call anytime, which we know y'all will. And I don't really have anything else to add, Bobby. You've been quiet over there. You want to take
us home? Angus talked too much, so hard to get a word in edgewise today.
Why don't you take us home, Bobby?
Oh, there ain't nothing to take home. It's lunchtime and I'm hungry, so I guess with that, if y'all have anything, like Angus said, call him, because this is definitely not the year that we're just going to do one thing on every acre. So the easy stuff, unfortunately, went out the window on the first planting that we tried to do, and now we're on the third, right, Angus?
That's right, in a lot of areas.
All right, guys, y'all get down the road. Y'all have a good weekend. Well, probably shouldn't say that because this probably won't go out today. Let us know if y'all have any questions.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.